In one crucial area of modern science, Harrer was most helpful to me. This was world geography. Within my personal library was a collection of English volumes on the Second World War, which gave detailed accounts of the participation in the war by a great many nations, including Japan. My adventures with a movie projector, fixing clocks, and trying to drive a car gave me an inkling of what the world of science and technology might be about. On a more serious level, after I'd been invested with the leadership of Tibet at the age of 16, I embarked on state visits to China in 1954 and India in 1956, which left a strong impression. The Chinese army had already invaded my country, and I was involved in a long and delicate negotiation searching for an accommodation with the Chinese government. My first foreign trip, when I was in my late teens, took me to Beijing, where I met Chairman Mao, Zhou Enlai, and other leaders of the regime. This state visit included a series of excursions to cooperative farms and major utilities, such as hydroelectric dams. Not only was this the first time I was in a modern city with paved roads and cars, but it was also when I first met real scientists. In 1956, I went to India to take part in the 2,500th anniversary of the Buddha's death. The main event took place in Delhi. Later, the Indian Prime Minister Nehru became something of a counselor to me and a friend, as well as my host in exile. Nehru was scientifically minded. He saw India's future in terms of technological and industrial development and had a profound vision of progress. After the formal celebration of the Buddha's final passing away, I saw many parts of India, not only the pilgrimage sites like Bodh Gaya, where the Buddha attained full enlightenment, but also major cities, industrial complexes, and universities. It was then that I had my first encounters with spiritual teachers who were seeking the integration of science and spirituality, such as the members of the Theosophical Society in Madras. Theosophy was an important spiritual movement in the 19th and early 20th centuries that sought to develop a synthesis of human knowledge, Eastern and Western, religious and scientific. Its founders, including Madame Blavatsky and Annie Besant, were Westerners but spent much time in India. Even before these official trips, I came to recognize that technology is in fact the fruit or expression of a particular way of understanding the world. Science is the basis of these expressions. Science, however, is the specific form of inquiry and the body of knowledge derived from it that give rise to this understanding of the world. So, although my initial fascination was with the technological artifacts, it is this, the scientific form of inquiry, rather than any particular industry or mechanical toy, that has come to intrigue me most deeply. As a result of talking to people, especially professional scientists, about science, I noticed certain similarities in the spirit of inquiry between science and Buddhist thought, similarities that I still find striking. The scientific method, as I understand it, proceeds from the observation of certain phenomena in the material world, leads to a theoretical generalization which predicts the events and results that arise if one treats the phenomena in a particular way, and then tests the prediction with an experiment. The result is accepted as part of the body of wider scientific knowledge if the experiment is correctly conducted and may be repeated. However, if the experiment contradicts the theory, then it is the theory that needs to be adapted, since the empirical observation of phenomena has priority. Effectively, science moves from empirical experience via a conceptual thought process that includes the application of reason and culminates in further empirical experience to verify the understanding offered by reason. I have long been gripped with a fascination for the parallels between this form of empirical investigation and those I had learned in my Buddhist philosophical training and contemplative practice. Although Buddhism has come to evolve as a religion with a characteristic body of scriptures and rituals, strictly speaking, in Buddhism, scriptural authority cannot outweigh an understanding based on reason and experience. In fact, the Buddha himself, in a famous statement, undermines the scriptural authority of his own words when he exhorts his followers not to accept the validity of his teaching simply on the basis of reverence to him. Just as a seasoned goldsmith would test the purity of his gold through a meticulous process of examination, the Buddha advises that people should test the truth of what he has said through reasoned examination and personal experiment. Therefore, when it comes to validating the truth of a claim, Buddhism accords greatest authority to experience, with reason second and scripture last. The great masters of the Nalanda school of Indian Buddhism, from which Tibetan Buddhism sprang, continued to apply the spirit of the Buddha's advice in their rigorous and critical examination of the Buddha's own teachings.